Amidst a flurry of injury problems, Newcastle not only dropped out of the Champions League at the group stage, but the hopes of qualifying for next season's competition have evaporated as well. However, the Magpies are still in with a shot of securing some form of continental competition, and this weekend they'll face a Spurs team who do have the Champions League firmly in their sights. I'm Kevin Hatchard, and this is Football Only Better. No injury issues for my top tipping team, starting with Mark O'Hare. Mark, it seems to me that considering he's had an appalling injury list to deal with for most of the season, Eddie Howe's actually done a decent job this term.
Yeah, I agree with that. And it's actually on my notes here that we need to give Eddie Howe some praise for steering Newcastle through some really, really choppy waters, as well as that sort of first Champions League came in a campaign in a long time, really. And to get them into a position of potentially being into Europe next season, I think has to be commended, really, because he has endured an incredibly sort of crippling injury crisis. You know, Joe Willock and Lewis Hall, the latest two players to be added to it. And I'm not actually sure many of the sort of wounded are back this weekend anyhow. So, you know, their squad is stretched to the bare bones, really, but they've shown enormous character, especially in recent weeks. I thought last week, the victory away at Fulham, you know, had to weather a storm there against the Cottagers, but they escaped and managed to sneak a winner too. So Anthony Gordon was back, was looking lively again, and the defence stood firm as well, considering I think they're missing, what, four of the first choice back five. You know, previously, you know, last midweek, they were minutes away from seeing off Everton as well. Before that, you had the remarkable turnaround against West Ham. So they're now just 2 points off Manchester United in sixth, which is quite remarkable considering all that's been thrown at them this season. So yeah, this is going to be a big test of that squad on Saturday, the early kickoff. The match immediately for me stands out for goals, but you're going to have to work pretty hard to find an attractive angle betting goals. More on that later, but the overs over 3.5, that is an odds on shot here. So I think you have to be inventive. I don't sort of make a habit of backing over 3.5 goal shots at odds on. Very seldom do I get involved there. So, but I looked at Newcastle. They've gone 5-3-2 in terms of win, draws and losses since the winter break in January, losing only at Arsenal and Chelsea. So I'm willing to sort of get them on side here at the prices. They're considered outsiders, which is understandable considering the players are missing and the caliber of opponents that they're playing against. But they've only lost three home league games all season, two of which were against Liverpool and Man City. So exclude the top three. They've got 9 wins, 3 draws and just 1 defeat in front of their own supporters. Last season, only Arsenal and Liverpool managed to win here. So you then flip it around and look at Spurs. And we touched on them in depth really ahead of that match against West Ham. What was it, 10 days or so ago? They have been the Premier League's great entertainers this season, especially away from home. But it's a point we've made that do they really warrant being sort of firm favourites away from home against some, you know, middling to good sides in the Premier League? I don't think so. Not perhaps as strong as they are this weekend. They have only won 6 away games all season, 5 of which came against teams in 12th and below. You look above that line, the only victory away from home came at Aston Villa when Unai Emery went a bit rogue of his tactical setup and it backfired. So they have earned some good results away from home. Absolutely they have. But more recently, I think we can sort of question and criticise some of their away performances. The West Ham game was quite disappointing. There was the no-show at Fulham. Everton, they were quite lucky to escape with a point. They were beaten up at Brighton as well. These are matches all since Christmas, really. So I'd be wary of back in Tottenham at the prices, and quite like Newcastle with the start. They've got a quarter goal start here on the Asian handicap. However, I touched earlier about having to engineer something goals-based. And I think there's a better priced alternative here. So I'm quite happy to back Newcastle double chance and both teams to score, which comes in at evens. As we know, Spurs are goal heavy in terms of their approach, and Newcastle are too. And it's very difficult to trust that defence with so many players missing. But I do fancy them to avoid defeat in this game. And there is an alternative too here. If you are expecting goals, 3 or 4, then I have to look at Alexander Isak to score at any time at 13 to 10. He has scored in 7 of his last 10 Premier League starts. He's scored in 8 of 10 St. James's Park starts in the Premier League this season as well. And he has got the third best minutes per goal record in the Premier League this season of all players who have scored at least 8 times. It's almost the same rate as Erling Haaland. Isak is coming in at 0.8 goals per 90, Haaland at 0.81. They are two of the top three. So here's a quick question to get us started. Of the players to have scored eight league goals or more this season, who has the best minutes per goal ratio in the Premier League? And this is not allowed for Lewis because he already knows the answer. So over to you, Stinch or Kev.
Oh, best minutes per goal. Who would it be? Who would it be? It's not Son, is it? No, he's played loads of minutes. It won't be him.
No, Stinch.
Oh, somebody that keeps coming off the bench, I suppose. I don't know,
Putting
Jota
you
for
out of your
Liverpool.
misery. He plays for Nottingham Forest, and it is Super Chris Wood, who is scoring at a rate of 0.85 goals per 90, which is absolutely astonishing, really. But yeah, so Isak at 13 to 10, I think, is fair enough against a Spurs side who will give you opportunities regardless.
I could have been here for 7 hours and I wouldn't have got to Chris Wood. He's already been mentioned. Sky Sports' Lewis Jones back in the starting three. Lewis, Tottenham and Villa, 11 points clear of sixth place Manchester United going into the weekend. We don't yet know if fifth will be enough for a Champions League spot. What we suspect it will, but Spurs just have to keep pushing for the top four regardless.
Yeah, they do, and I think it was Opta ran some numbers actually regarding the sort of coefficient ranking, and I think there's a really good chance that fifth is going to be enough. They think it's coming out at about 70% after the midweek results. So that also sort of bodes well for Newcastle's chances of Europe as well, because that would mean that eighth place will qualify you for the Conference League, and that's on the basis that the FA Cup is won by a team finishing in the top seven. So Man City, Man United, or even maybe Chelsea if they can put a run together between now and the end of the season.
Looking
So yeah,
forward to
there's
Coventry come storming through.
yes, hope so. Let's hope so. But so there is a lot of there's lots to play for, isn't there? Still in that sort of spaces between sort of ninth and sixth, as sixth or seventh place finish should also mean a Europa League spot. So, and if Newcastle could finish sixth or seventh, I think that would be a successful season considering the problems they've had with injuries, which you mentioned in your intro there. But yeah, for this game, I am on the same lines as Mark actually. St James's Park is a real fortress under Eddie Howe, as Mark has outlined already. And they had some really big wins there in the under his tenure, haven't they? Beat Brighton 4-1, beaten Spurs 6-1, Villa 5-1. So Tottenham might be on their way to becoming a sort of a Liverpool, Arsenal, or Man City level side maybe next season, but they're certainly not there yet in my eyes, and they remain quite sort of flaky and untrustworthy, I think. So I can totally see where Mark is coming from. With the Newcastle angle, I was actually very close to advising Newcastle here on the draw, no better, even money, based on those sort of strong home numbers and the fact Spurs aren't really a team I enjoy backing when going off favourites. It's just loads of risk reward, isn't there, in Ange's football? And I just think there's still some teething problems there, especially in midfield. Don't think that the Basuma axis with Sarr is quite working at the moment. And against Nottingham Forest, I thought they were very easily counter-attacked on. And I laid them actually against Forest last weekend and was actually feeling quite comfortable at 1-1 when sort of Forest were creating big moments. But then, talk of the devil, Chris Wood missed two absolute sitters just to go against Mark's per 90 shout there. And the first one where he smacked the post from about 3 yards out was absolutely bizarre, wasn't it? Just finish it. So, and then Spurs did what Spurs do, didn't they? They scored two goals in sort of a 6 minute spell to leave my bet looking like a bit of a foolish one laying them. So they have made me look quite stupid this season at times when I've been trying to take them on at short prices. But I do think Newcastle will give you a good run for your money here. But yeah, it is just that raw attacking ability from Spurs that have the ability to sort of take a game away from anyone in a really short period of time. And Newcastle's defence still is missing a lot of players, and that's just putting me off pulling the trigger, I suppose, on Newcastle. So I'm just going to feel more comfortable, I think, backing a goals angle, which is sort of fast becoming like a winter's a hug on a cold winter's night, isn't it? It just makes you feel so safe this season backing the goal line. And
What
it's
a
the
romantic image.
yeah,
Lovely.
it's yeah, we all want to feel safe, don't we? So it's the second half to produce more goals than the first half at 10 to 11. With the sports book, and this is a bet that I put up before when I've been talking about Spurs when they went to Fulham a few weeks ago, and I'm definitely looking to go in again. It looks like the traders have sort of adjusted their line slightly for this bet due to Tottenham's sort of second half surges of late, but I still think it's backable when sort of running the numbers in a game where the goals should flow Especially in a rate that we've seen normally, the normal rate in the second half this season has been outrageous, hasn't it? So this bet has landed in 58% of Tottenham's games this season, so 18 of their 31 games, and it's landed in 11 of their last 15 across all competitions. And it's also landed in 58% of Newcastle's Premier League games this season, so again, 18 of their 31 games. And even sort of the raw numbers just point to the huge spike in second half goals this season. I know we mentioned it before, but and that's obviously to do with the injury time situation. So there's been we're now at a rate where there's been 414 first half goals and 599 second half goals. So they're outperforming.
Wow.
Second half is still thrashing the first halves. So yeah, just when you factor in all the evidence in trying to get to sort of what the true price should be, the 10 to 11 on offer sort of implies a 52% chance of the bet landing. And I've got this bet closer to sort of 60%. So in my opinion, we should be getting sort of 8 to 13 or actually able to get 10 to 11. So yeah, the second half to have more goals than the first looks an angle to exploit for me here, Kev.
And last but not least, the master of the sustainable edge, Mark Stinchcombe, is with us. Stinch, Newcastle have only lost two of the last 10 in the league. They're nowhere near the defensive force they were last season. I know I keep picking on poor old Dan Burn, but I just find it an absurd image, him just kind of wheeling around at left back. But they're still in the mix.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned Dan Burn, for example, because Newcastle are 17 to 10 here. When they won 6-1 against Spurs last season, the Spurs side with Harry Kane, they were 10 to 11. So that's quite a big leap if you lose Tottenham's best player and then move Newcastle from 10 to 11 to 17 to 10. Obviously, understand and accept that Newcastle have got a lot of injuries, but given all the I mean, blessing poor Eddie Howe having all that money to spend. Given the fact they do have a decent second string, and they've proved that they are able to manage themselves to be in the top half of the table in the shout for Europe, then I don't think the second string of players on combined with some of the first choice players like Isak they still have available is the worst set of players to call upon. I mean, Tottenham 1.5 now to finish in the top four. A few weeks ago, Villa were the faves there, so we've seen how the prices have swung there, and kind of a big weekend really. Both teams got difficult away games with Villa going to Arsenal on the Sunday in between European tie. So I'm definitely not one to suggest that market is maybe done and dusted, but yeah, we definitely have Spurs in the favouritism as they are at this moment in time. I think it is quite key regarding the Premier League perhaps getting these extra European spots because then I think the whole finishing the top four sort of narrative won't be so prominent because of getting these additional places. So teams will maybe become a little bit more conservative and perhaps be happy to avoid defeat rather than having to go out. Maybe Villa no longer have to go out and win, and they would be happy to avoid defeat in order to get in these Champions League spots. So I think it makes it interesting, definitely towards the end of the season when we know a lot of teams sort of check out and be on the beach, and you wonder, okay, well, if we get these extra spaces, maybe the motivation factor will remain what it likely has been throughout the season. So I think that's an interesting angle, which I'm kind of looking forward to getting involved in the coming weeks, because I think what you see when you get towards the end of the season is so much volatility with the prices, and you do get some rather lopsided matchups because of the perceived lack of motivation. I think in terms of goals here, obviously, yeah, you'd want to back goals. Both teams actually scored 65 across their 31 games this season, so obviously over two per game. And there's been over 2.5 in 13 of Tottenham's last 14 games. So pretty much makes sense to want to get involved with goals. I agree that I wouldn't want to back Spurs at 5-4. Only won one of their last five away from home when faves. And I think Mark mentioned they only won six away from home all season. And yeah, so I think that the bet really here is Newcastle and the Asian handicap plus a quarter at 1.85, I think. And there was quite a lot of negative talk, I think, around Eddie Howe's position. Maybe that was because they were going for a sort of poor run of form. It's kind of reflected in the prices. For example, when they went to Arsenal and they didn't really show up, Arsenal, I think, were about 1-3, and that was a huge change compared to the previous season where Arsenal were going off evens against Newcastle. So you There's definitely, I think Newcastle have been one of the teams that have had huge volatility with their closing odds, and yeah, you can kind of marry it up with all their injury issues. So yeah, I think given their showings at St James's Park over the course of Eddie Howe's tenure, then yeah, I think Spurs are probably a bit too short here, and I think Newcastle should be favoured.
I have to apologise to Spurs actually and their fans because Spurs would be a lot better off if I hadn't kept tipping Heung-min Son to either score or have a shot on target. Because every time I've done it this season, he's had some kind of hex placed upon him and he hasn't scored or hasn't got involved in the game whatsoever. So apologies for that. Now we know that injury time goals can be the pain in the pocket if they ruin your bet. So now you've got 90-minute payout to rescue you if the clock hits 90 minutes and you've got the right result as it stands. Your bet wins when the match ticks into injury time. T's and C's in the description. 18 plus, begambleaware.org. Brentford impressed at Villa last week, coming back from 2-0 down to be 3-2 up before they had to settle for a 3-3 draw. But they have gone a couple of months without a win in the league. They face Sheffield United, Lewis. Is this a golden opportunity or is it a horrible trap?
Yeah, good question. Sheffield United have sort of switched it up in the last few weeks, and this is where my angle is for this game. And I think Chris Wilder has found a formula to make them competitive, hasn't it? And it revolves around playing Ben Brereton Diaz and Ollie McBurnie as sort of an old school front two, and basically just banging balls into the opposition half for them to compete for. And I'm for the rest of this bit on this game, I'll be calling them Big Ben and Bernie. So just keep that
Wonderful.
on the
Like
bin.
that.
So all duos need a name that sort of rolls off the tongue. So that Big Ben and Bernie just seem to be a bit more of
That's like a 70s cartoon, isn't it? Big Ben and Bernie. I could see
yeah. And
that.
it's a duo which I've been quite excited about in terms of what they've been doing in terms of their fouls won data over the past few games. So yeah, it's this change of style that Chris Wilder has gone to has seen Sheffield United record much more long passes in the last sort of four games or so, which is an increase. So they've hit 60.5 long passes per 90 in the last four games, which is a bit of a spike on what they've been producing this season. And the 41.8 aerial duels per 90 in that period is the most in the league, as they've looked to hit Big Ben and Burnley with those quick balls into the final third. And McBurnie actually averages the most aerial duels in the Premier League this season from players that have played a minimum of 1,000 minutes. So he's competing for, this is a massive number, 16.87 aerial duels per 90, and that's four more than any other player. And
Oh, wow.
that combo
Break
with
out the
Brent,
ibuprofen for that.
exactly. And this is where Brentford centre backs are in for a potentially hardcore game, I'd say, at the weekend. And so this kind of sort of direct football always triggers my interest in the fouls committed market for the opposition, as there's sort of lots of opportunities for the strikers to win fouls in a duel with defenders that are sort of looking to get tight, with sort of elbows and all sorts going on. So yeah, Big Ben and Burnley do have strong data over a big sample size for drawing fouls. So in 241 games played in the top tier of English football, McBurnie is working at a fouls won average of 1.59 per 90, and Brereton Diaz in 220 games has won 1.58 fouls per 90. And so the recent fouls conceded against them from opposition centre backs is a trend that I've jumped on, and it's certainly a profitable edge to exploit. So they've drawn 13 fouls between them in the last four matches, with centre backs being responsible for nine of those fouls. So this is, yeah, as I said, an exciting betting angle, as centre backs always sort of priced up as the outsiders in the fouls committed market due to their sort of low overall foul average over a large sort of sample size. So Chris Meppham and Zabani both made one foul in the two-all draw with Sheffield United. Tosin made three in the three-all draw with Fulham, and both Konate and Axel Disasi for Chelsea were punished twice for fouls trying to defend this style of play against those two strikers. And just for example, the prices on offer, Disasi was available at 5-6 for one foul and 4-1 for two fouls on Sunday for Chelsea. So this is the sort of prices that are available at the moment in this type of market. And just, yeah, I've been waiting for the traders to price up this, to put these prices in this weekend. So I'm excited to take advantage. And yeah, similar prices are available on Brentford centre-backs for this game. And just the tricky bit is just trying to put a strategy together, which puts us in the best position to make money. So I've come down on Zanka or Matthias Jorgensen, who's he's also known. And he looks the one to concentrate on here. He likes to engage in an aggressive manner and has made at least one foul in his last seven Premier League starts. So I was quite surprised to see 4-5 available with a sports book to make at least one foul. And he's 7-2 to make two or more fouls. And I think that's a gigantic price when you consider the likely style of football that he's going to be facing. And also the other two centre-backs that are likely to play in that Brentford back three are Nathan Collins. He's 11-10 to make a foul, but he does only average 0.32 fouls per 90 minutes in his Premier League career. And Christopher Ager is 8-13 to make at least one foul. So that's probably borderline backable. But again, because he's got a foul per 90 ratio of 1.12 this season. So he's likely to get involved as well. But I think Zanka's definitely the man at the prices. And if you really wanted to get a little bit clever, you can sort of mix and match, I think, the players' foul count with those three players on the bet builder to bring out some sort of fancy prices. So if Zanka, Asia and Collins all make at least one foul is 11-2 if you combine on the bet builder. And if you really wanted to dream, all three of them to make two or more fouls against Big Ben and Bernie comes out at 84-1. So that's on the bet builder. So that's it could be a quite a fun way to follow that game, I think. But I think if you just want to land yourself a winner, I think just back in the Zanka foul line at 4-5. For one or more, and 7-2 looks, yeah, really good angles to explore. And I'm excited about those bets this weekend.
Mark O'Hare's dream, that just cheering on violence all the way through a game with 84-1, the price at the end of the rainbow. Bournemouth against Manchester United. Bournemouth have done enough to secure their, you know, their primary objective, you would think. Manchester United nowhere near theirs, still floundering despite that result against Liverpool last weekend. It looks unlikely that they're going to be able to climb into the Champions League places. Mark, how's this one going to go?
God, good question. with Manchester United, who knows, really? I had a couple of digs from Man United fans over the past week or 10 days on social media, kind of being quite upset, saying that I just keep putting them down, keep opposing them, keep criticising them.
Yes, they're terrible. They're really bad. They're a really bad football team.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Why.
I was surprised. I don't have a horse in the race in the Premier League, you know, apart from hoping Chelsea's kind of eat themselves into extinction. But, you know, I'd like to think I'm objective and will sort of analyse matches how I see them, really. And that means it's impossible not to be negative against Manchester United for just a multitude of reasons. And, you know, you can talk about the on-field performances, but, you know, just to start with, you're looking at one of the biggest clubs in the world that's been run like a Sunday league side for too long now, spending absolute fortunes in the transfer market and on wages. And yet there's absolutely no on-field progress or direction since Sir Alex Ferguson left. It's laughable, really. But yeah, the main gripe for me is the on-field product, which we're here to try and make sense of and try and make money from. And Manchester United are just not operating in a sustainable way for getting consistent results. It's chaos, and that's an understatement. I mean, it's probably closer to a circus, really, than a chaos. And, you know, it's fantastic fun for the neutrals. It's genuinely tremendous fun. That Chelsea game on a Thursday night was just brilliant. But how can you
trust
them? Well,
that sums up exactly what we're talking about, right? Because they've got great individual quality. We know that. They can do great things from moment to moment. But the structure is all over the place, and the goals that they give away are routinely dumb. So therefore, we're going to criticise them because the structure's wrong, the coaching is delusional because Ten Hag will come out after they've given up 25, 30 shots and say, oh, it's all part of the plan, don't you worry. As long as we're getting results. It's just detached from reality to think that they're playing really well.
Yeah, I mean, I'll go further. I don't think there is any structure at all in what Manchester United are doing. And I'd be hugely critical of the coaching. You know, the Liverpool match of the weekend, just another example. United getting absolutely battered, especially in that first half. And just because their opponents are pretty profligate in the final third, they managed to pinch a very unlikely point. But the numbers, I've read them out previously, they're horrifying. But just to kind of go over them again, 22 shots or more conceded now in 8 of the last 9 Premier League games, 8 corners or more faced in 9 of the last 10. They're going to miss out on the Champions League for me. There's no chance of that happening. They're on course to take 15 fewer league points than last season. My expected points model actually has them in 17th, only above the bottom three, which is
Oh
astonishing,
my
really.
God. And that's based on things like the number of shots they're allowing, like just the XG process,
It's driven
all of
by
that
expected
stuff.
goals, yeah. But the XG process is 16th, so it's one place better off. Yeah, you can't put into words how bad that is based on expectations of where that club should be. So I'm going to put the boot in, and I will put the biggest boot I've got into the United, because they're absolutely appalling right now, and they're very difficult to trust as a betting proposition. And I think that applies to Saturday as well. You know, it's a home match against Liverpool is always going to get the juices flowing from a player's perspective for the club and the fans. But, you know, following it up with a trip to Bournemouth, perhaps not. And I think United perhaps are vulnerable this weekend. We saw that horrendous capitulation at Brentford recently. I don't expect things to be, you know, as bad as that, really, but I would be concerned. And Bournemouth weren't bad at Luton last week when losing. They played some really good stuff, especially in the first half, and frequently opened Luton up, but just failed to take their chances. And the winning goal came late, but it hurt Bournemouth. I don't believe they're on the beach, and I do believe a home tie against Man United will get them up for it. And, you know, I give those players, you know, they always have an element of responsibility, I think, whenever you play at home. And I think they're eager to show a reaction and a performance, because this club, this coach, still has ambition about them this season. I don't believe they're on the beach. They require 6 points from their remaining fixtures to better their highest ever Premier League points tally. And it's something they've been talking about quite frequently, actually, recently. That is something to aim for. And actually, if you look at Bournemouth, this might surprise people. But if you take out that horrible start they endured, where they stuck by Iraola when many people were calling for him to be sacked, if you look at the Premier League table since mid-October, Bournemouth, that's kind of around the time they finally found their feet. If you look at the results since then, they're sixth in the Premier League table, 2 points off Spurs with a game in hand, and 4 points better off at Manchester United. If you look at the last 16 Premier League games and look at underlying metrics, Bournemouth are ranked fifth on expected points. Manchester United are ranked 18th. So, whilst it might look a little bit confusing to see Bournemouth as favourites here against Manchester United, I think it's warranted. And even still, because of the prices, the market is still saying United are the better team. If this game was played at Wembley, United would be fabs. But on this occasion, I think it's another opportunity to oppose United. And there are a couple of ways I like sort of getting involved here. Both are available on the odds on that segment on the sportsbook. The first of which is to back Bournemouth to score, Bournemouth to win 5 corners or more, and Manchester United to have 2 cards or more. That comes in at even money. Yeah, United have been booked at least twice in 75% of away days. Bournemouth have drawn at least 2 cards in 88% of their home games. And the other, just based on the complete chaos of United games, 9-4, you can back each team to have at least 2 shots on target in each half. Which I think is not bad for a bit of interest here. Both teams are averaging well over 10 total shots on target per game. In their Premier League games at Bournemouth, there's an even split between 5 shots on target for and against at the Vitality. And United, when they play away, 4.3 shots on target for, 5.8 conceded per game. So I think that's a reasonable price to cheer on without having to have too much of a, you know, a stake in either team. So yeah, there's two selections there, but I wouldn't bet anyone back in Bournemouth drawing a bet either.
I love the idea that those United fans, in their attempt to silence you, will now, you know, tune in this week and think, "Oh, I
Bring it
wonder
on.
if we've managed to shut O'Hare up." Yeah. Oh no, we haven't. No, it's worse. We've
It's
made it
got
much.
worse.
Yeah, we've made it much, much worse. Lewis, I mean, it's just true though, isn't it? You know, Manchester United, you know, in the mix for Europa League, possibly Champions League in the cup semi-finals, people will say, "That's good. What's the problem?" But there are lots of problems. And it's Manchester United as well.
Yes, I love coming on this podcast, Kevin. I love talking to you guys, but I'm just getting so bored of talking about Manchester United. It's got to be said. It's just the same old story every week. And Bournemouth have only won one Premier League game this season against teams starting the weekend seventh or higher in the table. And guess who that came against?
And a fine win it was too at Old Trafford.
Yes, 3-0. And they could do the double for the first time in their history over them if they win on Saturday. So again, that just adds to that sort of motivational factor that they have for this match. And they're definitely not going to be on the beach. They're only 6 points off eighth place, which is, as we've mentioned already, that looks likely it could be a Conference League spot. So 6 points is nothing really to make up in at this stage of the season, really, when you're playing as well as Bournemouth are. So yeah, and Iraola had such a strong record actually against the big boys with Rayo, didn't he, in La Liga?
Yes,
so he'll be disappointed not to have ruffled more feathers this season. And I've been lured in a lot by Bournemouth against the big teams, and have not really made any sort of long term edges or profit on that. So, but he still had a fantastic first season in charge, and that just the fact how well they're playing is the fact they're favourites to beat Manchester United there, aren't they? 2.48 on the exchange. It is the right price though, so. The sort of 1x2 market wasn't one I really wanted to get involved with. But yeah, I wanted to just talk about Harry Maguire really for Manchester United. Really, I think he deserves a bit of praise over the past few weeks. And because being a defender at Manchester United is very hard work, isn't it? I mean, you're kept so busy over the 90 minutes. And in the last six fixtures, United have faced a total of 162 shots and had to defend 68 corners. So Maguire's and the centre-backs have been very, very busy. But I do think he's actually returning to somewhere near his best. I thought he was excellent against Liverpool, actually. He was almost a one-man defence at times. No player made more clearances than him. Eight, and he won more duels than any other player in the game as well. He won nine duels, which is the sort of levels you usually expect from Maguire. And in the last seven games in the Premier League, he ranks third for headed clearances per 90, where he's making 3.65 a game. And I just think the ridicule generated his way is just grossly unfair for a player that's been at the heart of, I would argue, is the most sustained period of success for an English national team. And he's never let England down when he's played. And just when he's on song, he's just a colossus, I think, of a dual winner. And few defend their box with the same level of or sort of authority as Maguire. And I remember just a performance, one of his performances sticks in my mind when England beat Germany at Wembley in the Euros a few years ago. That day, he was absolutely immense. And he was, when he's on song, he's a really brilliant defender of his box, and he's really hard to get past. He's still very vulnerable with the ball at his feet when his confidence is low. But I do think he's starting to regain a bit of that confidence now, and I think he remains a key player for Gareth Southgate, doesn't he? He's stuck by him, I think, and there's a reason for that, I think, and he knows the weapons that Maguire brings to the table as well, and that also comes in the shape of his ability from attacking set pieces as well, which I think is so underrated by the markets. He's so deadly for England when he plays. I'm always interested in backing him in the goal scorer and the shots market for England, because he's always the focal point for every set piece. And he scored seven goals in 63 caps for his country, which is a very, very impressive ratio. But his attacking output isn't quite seen at the same level for United. But when he's feeling confident and assured, his attacking output does spike, and he does attack crosses and corners and free kicks so aggressively. And I love centre-backs that do that, just from a betting perspective. You get some, don't you, just that go up for corners and free kicks, a bit of a token gesture. It's just sort of they sprint up and then they sort of pretend to jump for the set piece and they have to sprint back. But when Maguire goes up, he sort of goes up there with lots of intent, and he actually wants to score a goal. You can actually see that in the way that he attacks balls coming into the box. And he's definitely in the mood at the moment to be a big threat in the final third from set pieces. So since the start of February, no defender has posted more shots per 90 in the Premier League than Maguire. So that's 1.82 he's averaging, so nearly two a game. So he had three against Chelsea, he had four against Fulham where he scored, and he also had two against Villa where he also set up the goal from a header following a set piece, so he got an assist through that. And despite Bournemouth sort of standing a fair chance of winning this game, I do think United are going to have their moments and create opportunities for Maguire to go up. So if you exclude games against Liverpool and City, since January, Man United have averaged 17 shots per match. So they are conceding lots of shots, but also firing lots of shots as well. So he's going to get chances to venture forward. And I do think his price of 4-5 to register at least one shot looks a bet to me here on the sportsbook. So just to clarify, he doesn't have to be on target. He just has to get sort of that meaty head or part of his meaty body on something towards goal. And this is a bet that, again, would have landed in nine of his last 10 appearances for club and country when he's played more than 45 minutes. So Yeah, that 4-5 looks big to me, and also the 9-2 for him to have two or more shots is also a runner. And although Bournemouth are one of the better teams at defending set pieces in the Premier League, the 25-1 on him to score first also probably will give you a good run. So yeah, that Maguire price of 4-5 to have a shot definitely looks like getting some of my cash, Kev.
Manchester City in a chaotic Champions League quarter-final away at Real Madrid, but what a brilliant goal game it was. There were brilliant goals in it, of course. They face Luton this weekend, though, Stinch. Where are City at right now? Because you look at the expected goals data, we've talked a lot about this season. They are down both in terms of attack and defence. You know, they're well behind Liverpool in terms of the attacking XG, well behind Arsenal in terms of the defensive XG. And yet at times against Real Madrid, they look very, very good.
Yeah, the 3-3 kind of defied the expected goal logic. I think both teams were less than one, well less than one, but ultimately that's what you get when you have world-class players. They can
Yeah.
score difficult chances. So
That Valverde volley, I'm still thinking about it now. What an amazing goal.
I think from my side, I was cheering on Phil Foden's goal for Lewis's top goal scorer bet.
Ah,
So
yes. Still rattling along that one.
yeah, I think he's only two off the top. Correct me if I'm wrong, Lewis.
Yeah, two away. So he's and Mbappe didn't score yesterday, did he? So yeah, we're in a good spot for the place part at least. If he and that injury doesn't seem too bad. So yeah, I think it's still 22-1 available with each way stakes in mind. Which again, if you fancy City to get to the final, still not too bad considering he's probably their biggest goal threat at the moment. So yeah, exciting stuff. That if you've got a bit of the 40s or 50s that were available,
Yeah,
Mbappe the one.
and no easy ties really. So I don't think a case of him being rested, and unless they were to put five past Arsenal, which I wouldn't expect given their prowess this season. So yeah, where is City at? Well, the title race. Wow, the odds are like really, really exciting. City 2.64, Arsenal 2.98, Liverpool 3.45. I think it was a couple of weeks ago I mentioned the title race maybe could be won on goal difference, and
Yeah.
I think that still feels like a good spot. I think it's 5-1 now for it to be decided on goal difference. I still think that you could get to the last day of the season and that's still live. So I think that's an interesting one to look at. In terms of where City are at, I still feel, I've mentioned it a couple of times this season, still feel that the absences of Gundogan and Mahrez may catch up with them. You consider Gundogan's second half of last season was so clutch, just popping up with so
Yeah.
many big goals in big games. And you look at the replacements in, say, Kovacic, Nunez, Doku. Yes, probably Doku, for example, will go on to be a great player, but I'm happy to accept that maybe first season you have to integrate yourself into the Premier League and into Guardiola's style of play, and perhaps playing on the right doesn't really suit him so much. So maybe a bit of a confusing signing in a way, given got Grealish on the other side, who's looked quite good the last couple of games, Grealish, which I'm quite pleased about, because I think he's a key asset for England when you consider if they come up against teams that defend very, very deep, and his ability to occupy opposition defenders. But yeah, in terms of this game, City are obviously very, very short faves here, 1-14 against Luton, and I think as a result of that means there's an opportunity to perhaps get Luton onside. They're 10-11 to score a goal, so over 0.5 away team goals to find the bet. Now, I'm going with this rather than both teams to score, because both teams score is only evens, and I'm happy to just take the 10-11 just on the off chance Man City fire a blank. Probably won't, of course, very, very short odds to win the game, let alone score a goal. But I think sometimes you just need to accept that you take a slightly lesser price to ensure that you don't need as many things to happen. You could, of course, also back Man City to win and both teams to score, but again, that's only 5-4. And yes, okay, 10-11 to 5. 5-4, some would say a significant jump. But in my opinion, if Luton score, I think the state of the game could massively change unless it's a consolation goal. And if I like to back really heavy faves to win and both teams to score, but generally I'm looking at prices sort of north of 2-1. So in that respect, that one doesn't really catch my eye too much. But yeah, Luton only failed to score in 5 of 32 games this season. I think we've all been very pleased with how well they performed. I think we're all
Yeah.
very positive about their chances, given the kind of almost non-football side of things in terms of the fact that you know they weren't expected to be in the Premier League, the culture of the club, the underdog, they're playing it really well. But actually, the football they play has been really exciting in a way. I mean, that defensive line, I think they forget that if the opposition player's in his own half, they can't be offside. I'm not sure it can get much higher. Must be one of the highest in the league. But you know, as a result of that, that means they are a bit more attacking than perhaps say Sheffield United and Burnley, and think maybe the results and league table position are proving that perhaps taking a bit more of a proactive approach is proving fruitful. And I think they've adjusted to life quite well because I mentioned, as I say, for only 5 of their 32 games they failed to score. 4 of those came in the first 12 games, so they've only failed to score once in 19 of their last 20 games. And you look at them
That's
away.
amazing when you think about it, isn't it? Considering the jump in quality they've had to kind of absorb, that is some going.
Yeah, and I think Rob Edwards has done a terrific job when you consider the fact that last season he at the beginning of last season he took over at Watford and was sacked unsurprisingly, and then obviously took over Luton and continued the good work that Nathan Jones was doing there, and has taken them up. And it's many of the same players from last season in a way. You know, it's not been too many additions. I think perhaps the experience of Ross Barkley and Andros Townsend have been have made a difference. But you know, you look at like the likes of say Carlton Morris. You know, he was still there from the Championship last season. So, I think it's just created this really positive environment where you know they're always positive, and I don't think you'll ever see a game where Luton have sort of given up, if you like. Perhaps maybe you could label that as some other teams. So, yeah, we're just really, really, really sort of pleased with them, and it's difficult to say what their chances of staying up because of these sort of Everton and Forest points deductions. But I think as a neutral fan, probably a lot of happy to cheer them on for that. But yeah, away from home, scored in 12 of 16 games, so 75% strike rate. And I just think with City, obviously that was a mad game against Madrid, so they'll have to have all the focus on that, which is coming up next week. Then you've got Chelsea in the cup at the weekend, and then Brighton away, all of those taking place in the space of 8 days. So I think there could be some rest and rotation. We know Kyle Walker's out injured, Ederson unavailable as well. And I thought it was really interesting, read an article yesterday, like Rodri kind of saying he's tired and you know he needs to be left out. And we've seen the effect when Rodri's not been available. I think City lost at least, I think that City lost all 3 games without
Yeah, they really
Rodri.
struggled when he wasn't there. Yeah, absolutely.
Not just from a defensive point of view, because I think he's added so much more to his game offensively, but yes, of course, from a defensive point of view as well. And Man City have only kept clean sheet in 6 of their 16 home games this season, so it's not kind of the fortress one maybe would think of. But again, I think that's down to this additional injury time, a lot more minutes having to be played, and thus a lot more chances for goals to happen. And look, Luton have already played City twice this season, albeit at home, but they did score 3 in those 2 games, so I don't think it's too much of an ask for them just to score one. And we know how difficult nowadays it is to get a decent price on goals based bets in the Premier League because of the increase in goals, because of the increase in additional time. So I think Luton to score a goal, not short of evens, is decent, even when you factor in that they are coming up against one of the best teams in the league.
Now, if you want to be notified every time a new episode of Football Only Better goes live, make sure you follow wherever you get your podcasts. And for the YouTube version, make sure you like and subscribe to Betfair's new channel for non-racing content. Lewis, let's take it to the bees, seeing as we've had a lot of bees, Big Ben and Bernie and all that business. Burnley and Brighton. I mean, Brighton have kind of just, they're kind of just drifting away. De Zerbi's talking about leaving. It's all kind of ending in a bit of a damp squib, isn't it, really?
Yeah, it is a little bit, and they don't look like a Roberto De Zerbi team actually at the moment, do they? They're very sort of unthreatening with the ball and not taking the chances that are dropping away, not really creating any big moments in matches. They've gone from being one of the sort of the best teams to watch in the Premier League to actually one of the most boring teams to watch, which I'd never thought I'd say about a De Zerbi team. So yeah, just looking at this matchup, I just won't forgive myself if I don't take a strong view on the under goal lines here. It's obviously not been a season where under goal backers have made any money, really, but as a punter that can sort of stomach an unders bet, I'm always sort of lurking in the shadows, waiting to strike when the prices are right, I think. And I think
You
this is the
unusual people who are there cheering for goalkeepers making saves and things like that,
yeah, I can
desperate for a nil-nil.
you say I'm not wired properly, I don't think, in that regard. But in terms, as long as it's in the search for profit, I think, yeah, I'm happy to back the unders line, and that's definitely what I'll be doing here, I think. Because we're actually dealing with two of the worst attacks in the Premier League since December. So this is a sample size now of 19 matches. So if you take out matches against Sheffield United, Burnley have scored 17 goals in 18 matches, so that's 0.94 goals per game. And Brighton have just scored 18 goals in their last 17 matches at an average of 1.05 a game. And if you remove Sheffield United from that equation again, Brighton have scored just 13 goals in their last 15 games across all competitions. And
Yikes.
in those 15 games, they've only scored more than one goal in that game just twice, and that was over in 4-1 win at pa over Palace and against Stoke in the FA Cup. So yeah, basically the way I see this game going is Brighton aren't playing with enough confidence or sort of swagger or any real desire to score multiple goals, and Burnley just aren't clinical enough to take their chances that when Brighton will offer up those moments, which they always do. So it just has to be an unders bet for me on the goal line here. And I had the misfortune actually of covering Everton versus Burnley last weekend. And both teams were
My
absolutely dreadful.
condolences.
Yeah, but Buzz Killington came to the party again for Everton in that
Yeah.
game. Sean Dyche called it an ugly win, and that oversold it, I think. It was just hideous, gruesome, sprung to mind. It's one of the worst games I've covered this season, probably the worst. And even though the two sort of big moments for Everton came from terrible Burnley errors again with the ball, that was the goal for Calvert-Lewin, which was blocked in from a Muric clearance and then the O'Shea sending off. I still think Vincent Kompany has tried to go back to basics a bit more in recent weeks, and the data is showing that they're certainly playing sort of more long balls and trying to utilise set pieces a bit more like you would normally see from a traditional sort of promoted team. And I think they're actually going to play with much more reserve here, and I don't think they'll be stupid enough to try and play Brighton at their own game of just trying to press and make it into a chaotic game. I think they'll sit off and try and take their moments when they come. And I think actually allowing Brighton the ball at the moment is a good tactic because they don't create anywhere near enough with the ball in the final third. And as we keep referencing, they're missing a lot of their forward line that led them to a lot of
Yeah.
success last season. And they're just lacking confidence still in those areas. So the bet that stands out to me, just have to back this. The goal line on the Betfair Exchange for under 3 goals is trading at 1.9. Which looks huge considering the lack of firepower in both teams. So this bet would only lose if there's four or more goals in the game. I just can't see that. And we get our money back if there are three, and we get a full stakes return. Sorry, we get a win if there are two or fewer goals. So that's an angle I'll be looking to plan. Also, 9 of Brighton's last 31 Premier League games have ended 0-0 or 1-1, which is a 21% strike rate. So it's quite a common theme, these 0-0s and 1-1s. So I think I'll be throwing a couple of darts at the correct score as well. So you get on the exchange, you've got 19-1 for the 0-0, and Brighton have been involved in three, I think, this season. And you can get 8.7, which I thought was big for the 1-1 on the exchange as well. And that was the result actually when the two teams met at the Amex earlier this season. So yeah, hopefully we can swim against the tide with the Premier League goal rush and find an unders bet here.
Let's move to Spain. They've been mentioned already, actually. Rayo Vallecano, a club that doesn't allow you to book tickets online. Very much stuck in the past. Their club shop is basically a tiny little kiosk, strange little club. But up against Getafe, Getafe should be fine. They've had a decent push under Jose Bordalas, who seems to have made them much less bloodthirsty, which I'm not very happy about. They used to be an absolute guarantee for violence, but they've had this spell where they're not getting quite as many cards. Stinch, how's this one going to go? Because Rayo was still in a bit of trouble, aren't they, actually?
Yeah, Kev, I reckon you must have missed the previous game between these two because Getafe had
Oh, I didn't
three
see the
red
previous.
cards.
Oh, yes, there were lots of yes. But before that, I mean, again, this is me being a curse, but I was backing cards, backing over cards and what have you. They have like one. It was a game against Real Madrid, which is a Madrid derby. They had like one card, so I've written them off. I'm too angry with them now. That's what it is.
They are actually still the dirtiest team in La Liga this season. I think maybe, Mark, correct me if I'm wrong, I think maybe they're just getting lots in one game rather than
Yes.
rather than spread evenly
Bursts.
out. Yes,
Yes.
yes, yes, yes.
All
And
the games where I tip them, they're not getting cards, and all the
well,
games where I don't, they're unleashing the violence.
this is why you have to keep backing it every week, Kev, so that
Yes, I know. You're right. You're right.
you make a long-term profit. Yeah, this is a very, well, for me, this is a very exciting game. South Madrid derby, for those that aren't aware, between Real and Getafe. Yes, Getafe safe. I actually saw Bordalas being linked with higher jobs, which I think, would definitely be, if you could back any time manager to be sacked, I think that would easily be a bet if he was to take over a higher team. I just don't think players of a higher caliber would want to get on board with his, yes, we'll just kick them all over the park approach. Maybe a bit like the Damned United, maybe in that respect. But yeah, this is, I would say, like Rayo battling re relegation, or in the they're outside of it at the moment, but never too far away from the relegation zone this season. And on top of it being a derby, the Rayo fans are planning a protest this weekend because the club are looking at moving stadiums, and they don't want to. So yeah, I'm envisaging a very, very feisty atmosphere. Spoiler alert, already happened. Obviously, the previous fixture, Getafe had three red cards in a match featuring 11 overall. Our mate Damian Suarez, he managed to get booked. Then after he was subbed, he managed to get a red card after that. So don't even have to be on the pitch to be getting cards for Getafe. So yeah, I think it's going to be a tight encounter. Generally, when these two meet, it is 9 of the last 12 have gone under 2.5 goals, which is reflected in the prices. Real, not surprising, they're faves at home, 23-20, but under 2.5 goals is 1-2. So yeah, it's not likely to be a classic in terms of the actual football played, but I obviously want to bet on there being lots and lots of cards. Given what we've seen in previous meetings, as I mentioned, 11 in the reverse, over the last five, it reads 11, 8, 5, 7, and 13 cards.
Oh my
That
God.
There's been eight or more cards in 12 of the last 21 meetings. So there's no prices at the moment, but I thought this is definitely one that I've got to be mentioning. I think the line probably will be 6.5 with overs as the fave. So I would prefer to back, say, 7.5 at odds against over 7.5. But I would actually prefer, my preferred bet actually is to back a red card. I'm hoping we might be able to get 2-1 or higher. Five of the last 11 meetings have featured at least one red card. And then obviously on top of that, you want to be backing both teams to get a red. And again, I'd hope to get sort of around the 20-1 plus mark. If you look at both teams this season, I mentioned Getafe, the dirtiest side in the league. In just 30 games, they've had 105 yellows and 9 reds. And then Rayo are the sixth dirtiest team with 80 yellows and 4 reds. So between them, 13 reds this season. And as I say, you throw that together and then put that with the derby element, I think it could be a real exciting one, not to watch, but just to see the cards being distributed. No ref appointed at the moment, but
No ref at all. It'll be even more chaos.
that doesn't really bother me too much, because the prices will reflect the referee's tendency. So if we get a below average carder, we'll get a better price essentially, and I'm happy to take it, because if they're at, if you punch somebody or headbutt somebody or whatever, or insult the ref, they hopefully will follow the rules, unlike Mr. Taylor, and abide by them and dish the cards.
Let's move on to Italy. Bologna against Monza, Mark. Bologna absolutely flying at the moment. I know, obviously, they had that frustrating draw with Frosinone recently, but they're on track for top four. And under Thiago Motta, they've been absolutely sensational.
Very much so, yeah. My old friends Bologna, I've backed them multiple times this season, and they've always looked after me. So hopefully they'll do so again this weekend. They are just 4 points off Juventus now in third, but Roma are on a bit of a tear, aren't they? So they're just 3 points behind Bologna. So the pressure is definitely on going into this weekend. They're desperate to secure Champions League qualification. It would be a remarkable achievement for Thiago Motta and his team. They play in a nice, aggressive, fearless, bold style. They're quite fun to follow, especially at home. And he's had quite a sort of transformative impact, really, on several of the players in that squad. You look at Riccardo Orsolini, who he's always had talent, but never really put it together consistently. He's now in the picture for the Italian squad for the Euros. You've got the likes of Riccardo Calafiori, traditionally a left back, never really got an opportunity, had to move around in Europe and came back to Bologna and has really excelled at centre half. Even Lewis Ferguson has enjoying a breakout season, captaining the team. He's been a real force. And then up top, you've got Joshua Zirkzee, who continues to go from strength to strength and has a number of top clubs around Europe watching him and his progress. He is back fit and available, which is a big plus. And Bologna at home this weekend, which is the big key element of this selection against Monza. They've gone 12-2-2 in front of their own supporters. But if you look at the two defeats, one was in the opening weekend against Milan, the other was against Inter, runaway leaders. So exclude the top two, of which Milan and Inter are. Bologna have bagged 12 wins from 14 unbeaten home league games this season and conceded just 5 goals. Since February, home or away, Bologna have won 8 of 10, keeping 6 clean sheets. So I quite fancy them again to get the points against the Monza side, who have settled into mid-table, never in danger of going down, rarely troubling the European places either. Very commendable. They've done very, very well to do so. But they are quite a predictable team if you look at their metrics, because they are very businesslike against the bottom half and very poor when taking on the top teams in the division. So they are sat in 11th. They've taken 35 of their 42 points against the bottom half, losing just once. But against the top half, they've gone 1-4-10, which includes 5 defeats and 7 winless trips on their travels, scoring once in those 7 away days. Since March, they have lost to Roma, Napoli, and Torino, the three top half teams they've faced. And yes, you're looking at a Bologna side who've got the second best home record in the division after Inter. So you can back Bologna and put under 4.5 goals alongside it, package them together, and you get 185. Just one Bologna match has featured 5 goals or more this season. They tend to get the job done. If you want to be more aggressive, just back them to win to nil or BTDS, yes, no. I'll take the more pragmatic approach.
To the EFL, then, Oxford against Peterborough. Oxford, regulars on this show over the years. Stinch, what have you got for us this time?
Yeah, I think we've done all right when we've got involved generally with Oxford, generally our goals, base bet, and that's where I want to go again. This is another big game, sixth versus fourth in League One, in the battle for promotion and playoffs. I was actually watching the market on Wednesday night. You know how most people are watching Barcelona v PSG or Atletico v Dortmund. I'm just sat there
Yes.
watching numbers change. No, I just had it on in the background. But yeah, it was really, really interesting actually to see. Oxford were chalked up at 6-4 at home, so pretty much equal faves with Peterborough. But by as the evening was unfolded and Peterborough were playing themselves, the Oxford actually drifted to 2-1, which I thought was really, really interesting because Peterborough only beat a poor Port Vale side 3-0, and Port Vale, one of the worst teams I've seen this season, if not the worst. And there's some slight doubts over sort of two of Oxford's best players in Cameron Brannigan and Elliot Moore. But I did some digging, and Cameron Brannigan last weekend went off with a knock on his ankle and was seen leaving in one of those protective boots. So slight alarm bells. But I did some research and I found a picture of him at his academy with his football boots on. So I'm going to declare that he's going to be fit.
Okay. Was it a picture you took on a
No,
long
no, no,
lens?
no, no. He tweeted it, and also he mentioned that he'd brought his friend Elliot Moore along as well. So I'm assuming they're both going to
Ah,
be
see,
okay. But
so
I'm
you've
not
got a
getting
double
involved.
whammy there.
Yeah, I'm not getting involved in the match odds, but it's just really interesting, the fluctuations you see so far ahead of kickoff. We're talking like 3 days before kickoff, and it's maybe something that like listeners don't sort of know, but obviously the further away from kickoff, much, much more easier to move prices because the limits are so low. So if someone's back in Peterborough and they're sort of hitting their max stake, then those odds are gonna get moved across the board. So it's quite interesting interesting to see the movement in prices. I sort of just wanted to sort of give a quick rundown. But yeah, I want to get involved with goals. I want to back over 2.5 and both teams score at 4-5. I'm surprised you can sort of get it around this mark. We know nowadays in England with the additional time, we can't really find any sort of backable over 2.5 games. We know they're going off quite short prices. And then generally when you throw in both teams to score, generally still doesn't really become a backable price yet. Yeah, this one seemingly has. So I'm quite keen to get on board, given that the two teams are quite offensive and not that great at the back. Oxford have kept 3 clean sheets in 4, but they're all against sort of relegation battlers in Burton, Fleetwood and Port Vale. So if you go further back, it's just 4 clean sheets in 21. And Peterborough, yeah, just crazy generally. 23 of their last 27 have gone over 2.5 goals, and 16 of their last 20 have seen both teams to score. And these two teams have sort of been at similar levels of overall ability, if maybe not shown on a regular basis over the last few seasons, always sort of generally battling for promotion. Oxford had a bit of an off season last year, but have come back to similar levels. And Peterborough won this fixture 2-1 at Oxford last season, and a lot of the sort similar players involved, and I think it was done and dusted after an hour, if not the first half. So yeah, I kind of feel this game sort of starts with 3 goals and then we see where it goes. So yeah, I'll be disappointed not to come out with a winner on Saturday, and the only sort of way I see that not happening is if someone keeps a clean sheet. And yeah, I'll be disappointed to see if either of them keep clean sheets.
Now it's time for the world-famous podcast Treble, a betting feature so revered that Beyoncé says listening to it was her greatest joy when writing a very successful new country album. Mark, have you been glued to Beyoncé's new country album? You aware of this?
No, I'm not a country music fan, really. But yeah, I've told you before, Kev, I'm all right with music. It's more just the sort of fantasy nonsense that you're into that I
gets really annoyed
dismiss.
When I make out that he doesn't know anything about music. He gets really annoyed. But so Beyoncé, you're a big fan of then?
I wouldn't say I'm a big fan, no.
Okay.
Yeah.
But aware of her work?
Very much aware of her work and her previous work with Destiny's Child, obviously.
Oh, he's showing off now. He's showing off. Can you name another member of Destiny's Child apart from Beyoncé?
Kelly Rowland.
Oh, very good. Very good. Oh, I might have to change how I think about Mark O'Hare. Maybe I'll chuck a pop quiz at him every so often. How this works, by the way, apart from all the pop culture business, is each of the three guys come up with a selection ahead of the weekend's action, and our lovely traders, like Emmett, of course, who's a regular on the show, wrap them up for you in a boosted treble. So, Stinch, I'll start with you.
I'm quite up on Beyoncé's new album, very popular in our household, particularly enjoying the Jolene rendition. I would like to back both teams to score in Liverpool v Crystal Palace. Is currently 5-6. Both teams have scored in 14 of Liverpool's last 17 games, and at Anfield it's 13 of their last 15. And I'll go into more detail on the Sunday show.
Yes, make sure you listen to or watch the Sunday show, of course. Lewis, I'll go to you.
Yeah, all over this Zanka foul price. So Zanka to make one foul against Sheffield United, and hopefully Big Ben and Bernie can bring the noise.
Lovely stuff. And Beyonce's biographer to take us home.
Bologna.
To win, presumably, not just the city of Bologna. Or yes,
please.
Bologna's
win. Yes.
Lovely stuff. Now, this has all been very lovely. We've had a nice time. We've given you lots of good bets, but the whole time you've been thinking, come on, when's Scott Watch coming on? Here it is, Mark O'Hare's Scott Watch.
Oh, aye, it's Scott Watch.
Mark, take it away.
Yeah, last week's selection was abandoned after a quarter of an hour. Edinburgh City's
what
match was
Montrose.
the winds apparently were pretty crazy. So much so that Edinburgh City had tweeted about the match just once during the game before obviously having to say that the match was abandoned. And that the tweet said, "The wind is crazy, but it's been end-to-end so far." That was all it said. And then a few minutes later, they said, "Match off." Match abandoned due to heavy winds and unplayable conditions. So I'm going to go back in on Edinburgh City. For all the reasons I mentioned last week, they might be down and out in Scottish League One, but they're still putting up a bit of a fight. They scored recently in the last two away trips, one of which was at Falkirk, who are the runaway league winners of Scottish League One this season. They scored in 11 of 16 away days already this season too. And I just think the 6-4 on both teams to score for their match away at Queen of the South is just too big to ignore based on those metrics. Queens are the kings of BTTS in Scottish League One, especially at home, where 13 of their 16 games have already seen both teams to score. And that's due to the fact that Queen of the South are yet to keep a clean sheet in front of their own supporters. They've played Edinburgh City three times already this season. All three have seen both teams scoring. Two of those have seen Queens win. So again, I wouldn't put anyone off the home win and BTTS, which boosts it to 3.2. But just because it's 6-4, I don't think we can just turn down that kind of price. So I'll just take the shorter price for this week's selection, Queen of the South versus Edinburgh City, both teams to score 6-4. In terms of Culture Corner, we've done both of these two teams, but I wanted to circle back on Queen of the South because there's so much good content surrounding that club. They're located in the southwest of Scotland in Dumfries, the town where Calvin Harris grew up, and he is still a supporter of Queen of the South. And as we said previously, Queen of the South claim to be the only league club in the UK to be mentioned in the Bible. There are quotes from Luke and Matthew which feature Queen of the South, and the club play a song titled "The Only Team in the Bible" when the teams run out of the tunnel before the game. But yeah, Queen of the South got its name because Dumfries was nicknamed the Queen of the South by a local poet who stood in the general election in 1857. In one of his addresses, he described Dumfries as the Queen of the South, and it became synonymous with the town. But their nickname is the Dunhamers, which comes from the position of Dumfries in the south of Scotland, with its residents often talking of returning Dún home in Scottish. I can't really do the accent very well, but based on that, the club mascot is Dougie Dunhamer, who is a human-sized border collie dog, the character of which has been has been
hang
played
on,
for many years.
On, human-sized border collie.
Yeah, well, right, you know, okay. A mascot who's just a border
collie.
Yes, yes,
who
yeah.
is a human, right? Yeah. He's not just like a mutant border collie, he's just enormous.
No,
right,
that's
okay.
a stupid
yes.
turn of phrase. Apologies. But yeah, the character...
No, I like it very much.
The character underneath, this made me chuckle, has been played for many, many years by a local supermarket worker called Brian Harkness. And so good a job has he been doing for Dougie Dunhamer. He's twice won the SPFL mascot race, which is the mascot Grand National in Scotland, Hamilton Park. And he once finished runners-up as well. So he must be pretty sharp on his feet. And yeah, just to finish off.
I'm not
off,
surprised he's a human-sized border collie. He must be rapid.
Just to finish off, a bit of a boring stat, but there's so much good stuff on Queens. They actually boast the highest freestanding floodlights in Scottish football, which were first used in 1958. 85 feet tall. That is quite tall. But
in
yeah,
the wind,
it.
That would be a bit of a concern, wouldn't it? It's freestanding.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
So, there you go. More on Queen of the South another time.
Well, Dougie Dunhamer might be in big trouble if he stands too close to those floodlights, but there we go. Something a little different to finish the show, because it's the Grand National, of course, at Aintree this weekend. We're going to start because Lewis always has a tip for us ahead of these big horse races. Go on then, Lewis. What have you got for us?
Yeah, we did okay with the Gold Cup tip. Old Corrick Rambler stayed on into third to reward each race support at 14-1. So hopefully we can bring some more profit here. And it sort of does make me laugh at this time of the year, actually, because I get the twice a year messages checking in on WhatsApp. Always, they always send me something on the 1st of January saying Happy New Year. And then in mid-April, it's, hi, mate, how are you? How are you? Have you got a tip for the Grand National? So, and then nothing for the rest of the year. So
yes.
I'll be telling those people the twice a year messages to back Delta Work each way at 20-1 on Saturday. The Trends boys will tell you no horse can win the National aged 10 and above. Delta Work is 11, but he's not your usual 11-year-old. He's quite lightly raced over fences. He's only made 23 starts. So I do think the age factor is affecting his price a little bit. He's been disregarded a bit by the market. I do think he's going to run a massive race. He's run well in the National before. Finished third 2 years ago behind Noble Yates. So we know he likes the unique test at Aintree. And he's actually very unlucky to be brought down last season when travelling well into contention on the second circuit. So you know he's He likes the track. He likes Aintree, and also the key part of this is the rain has come for him at the right time. I think he needs a bit of dig in the ground. So there's lots of positives there for a horse that's trading at 20-1 with each way stakes in mind. I'm sure he's going to run a pretty sound race, and he'll do for me each way.
Now, we've spent pretty much our entire budget for the year on some technology here that's going to give us each a horse to cheer on for the Grand National. So this is all very exciting, especially for viewers. This is part of the YouTube channel for non-racing content. If you've liked and subscribed, as you should have done because I've been telling you to for weeks, then this is very exciting for you. Each of us is going to spin a wheel. Imagine that. And each of us is going to be given a horse to cheer on. So let's start with Mark, shall we? Is that how it works? I should have thought ahead of time. And you've got Noble Yates. That's the one that you'll be cheering on. Oh, no. No, apologies. It's much more random than I was led to believe. Because you don't pick it for an individual person. Stitch has just been randomly given Noble Yates. Lovely
happy
stuff.
Days.
So
previous winner of the race.
Well, there we go. Stinch, there we go. So Stitch is happy with that. Let's spin the wheel again. This is great content. This is very, very good. This might be the best thing we've ever done. Oh, just missed Delta Work there. It would have been great if that had gone to Lewis. But I get Galvin. Okay, I'll be cheering on Galvin come Saturday. Two more spins of the wheel. That's all you've got left. That's all the adrenaline that we have left. So here we go. Here's the next spin. And it is Mr. Incredible, it seems. And Lewis. Well, there you go. Mr.
Very
Incredible.
Fitting that. Very fitting.
It's almost as if he fixed it himself. And one more to go. Mark, bless him, thought he had a horse already. Now who he's going to get? Shake him up, Harry. There we go. Lovely stuff.
Harry Redknapp's horse.
Oh, God.
No. I knew you would be happy with that.
Yes. Well, a terrific way to finish the show. That's all we have time for on this edition of Football Only Better. Please do remember to gamble responsibly. I think we've got enough budget left for the Sunday show, but I'm not sure. I'm going to have to check whether we've spent it all on that wonderful spinning wheel. Lots of Grand National coverage, by the way, on our website, betting.betfair.com. So make sure you lock into that. From Stinch, from Lewis, from Mark, from me and the human-sized border collie, it is goodbye for now.